Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Only on Memphis' sports station, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Mario Giannotto is the sports columnist over at The Commercial Appeal. He's the host of Giannotto and Jeffrey. You can hear him every afternoon from 2 to 4. That is, of course, unless he's got a Penny Hardaway press conference or, he's got a sneeze or anything like that.
And I have another job, John. I know you have another job, but
we don't talk about that. Yeah. We only talk about yours here on 92.9.
Hey, be careful with that mic, too, there, Giannotto, because that's the Jeff Calkins sick mic.
Oh. Yes.
Oh, really?
The flu ain't just going around the Memphis basketball program.
Back up a little bit.
You can take the shield off if that would help, if you think. But, again,
probably
I don't know.
Would, actually.
I don't know. I don't want to. It would require you to put your hands on
it. I have a one-year-old who's in daycare, and so he's permanently just sick.
Yeah.
So I feel like he's strengthened my immune system.
There you go. That's actually a benefit.
Good way to look at it as well.
All right, so let me ask you this, Mark. The Grizzlies have won 3 in a row. They've looked good, frankly, the last
5 of 6.
I think
Mark knows.
9 of 16. 9 of 16.
Yeah.
16 of 48 or however 38.
No, they're 10 and what are they? They're 10 and 6. 10 of 16.
Yeah. 10 of 16. Wow.
Yeah, John was actually doing the entire season, which was weird.
Yes.
Just right there. You tried, right?
Yeah, it doesn't sound as good. Yeah,
no, do 10 of 16 because that sounds more like playoff team.
That's right. That's right. Let me ask you this, Mark. Can we not just enjoy this for what it is?
You knew you were going to get attacked in this segment.
I'm not attacking you. I'm providing just a different viewpoint.
Listen,
can we not just enjoy it for what it probably actually is?
I think you can enjoy it any way you look at it. Here's what I would say about the reason I think it's just great to think about the playoffs is that there's no pressure attached to it. It's not like Portland where, like, if they don't make the playoffs, it's a huge disappointment.
Yep.
If San Antonio doesn't make the playoffs, it's a huge disappointment. Here in Memphis, it's like a no pressure, no expectation situation where we can think about the playoffs, but ultimately if they fall short, you shouldn't be disappointed. There's no, they weren't supposed to be in this situation to begin with.
I heard you explain that and the fact that there's no real letdown. And I just think in Memphis, we have a tendency to forget the letdown part of it because you're right. I think we should swing for the fences. Forget, go win a title. That was part of the reason why I said you got to hit the button and rebuild it. But it's sort of if it becomes the expectation in any way, which is what you're not saying.
No.
You don't make it the expectation. But if it does, and in Memphis, we have a tendency to grab on pretty quick to a new one. If that does, then that is sort of a disservice to those guys because that was never never have been the goal in the first
game. What I feel like this year has done, though, it has made it so that next year there might be an expectation
absolutely
to make the playoffs, to be the 7-8
seed. So your point, I've heard you talk, do you go use some cap space now because maybe you're a little bit further ahead than you were, so maybe you're moving in, you're a year ahead of schedule.
Well, here's reality. I was looking up. They have a worse record right now than last year's team had at this point. That's something to take into account. The reason they're in, if this was last year, they would not be close to the eighth playoff spot. It's probably more because the wet teams like Portland and San Antonio and Sacramento, Minnesota are worse than people thought they were going to be. More so than the Grizzlies are, even though the Grizzlies are better than what we thought they were going to be. I think it's more a case of the competition is not as good as we thought. But at the same time, the brand of basketball they're playing.
Oh, it's fun.
Like last year, they may have had a better record, but this is way more enjoyable to watch.
Absolutely.
I just think it's, because it just feels like people haven't had a lot of fun with the Grizzlies in the past couple years. And, why not have some fun with this? Last year we had, 15, 20 games where it felt like the Grizzlies were fun at the beginning of the year.
Yep.
And even then it was like, well, they're fun. Even then, everyone was proceeding with caution.
Right.
And then the year before that, you had the Mike injury and the tanking. And even the Fizdale, the first Fizdale year, felt like there was maybe a 15, there was like a 20-game stretch there where it felt like fun. And then even when they got to the playoffs, like the tail end of that season felt like a struggle. And it's like, let's have some fun with this. That's all I just feel like it's, why think about what might not happen or what probably won't happen? Like, I mean, let's be honest. If you look at the schedule, my guess would be they're going to go on a hot streak right now because they're playing, they have a lot of home games and they're not playing a lot of great teams. If you look at the last 2 months of the season, there's a lot of road games,
no doubt,
and a lot of them are against better teams.
They're good teams.
So chances are, my guess would be, in reality, when we're talking right now, like they've gone from, what were they predicted to win, 27 games?
Right.
And now we're saying, well, maybe they can get the eighth playoff spot. In reality, my guess is they've raised their ceiling to, or they've raised their projection to, they've gone from a 27-win team to probably like a 35-win team.
That sounds about right.
And that eighth playoff spot will probably go to a 38 or 39-win team. And so they'll probably fall short of getting the playoff spot. But that also means through March, they're going to be in the mix and they're going to be playing competitive basketball games that mean something. And it was interesting at the Georgia game. Zach Kleiman does not really speak publicly, but I talked to Zach Kleiman for a while because they were at the pregame watching Anthony Edwards. The whole front office was there.
Mm-hmm.
And I was talking to him about the team, and he said it's just really important for this group that they're playing in games that are important, that mean something. It's not just, like, I think this is better than, say, like, the Hawks last year won 35 games.
Yep.
But a lot of those wins came at the end of the year in games that, even though they won, they weren't meaningful. They weren't necessarily competitive in the sense that they were just, they beat up on a lot of teams that had folded their tents.
Right.
And the Grizzlies are getting these wins. Like the Timberwolves, the Suns, you saw Monty Williams reacted after the Grizzlies beat. Like, the Suns wanted to win that game. Like, and I think that, more than anything, is going to fast-track the development of this team. Like, going through a fourth quarter like last night where Ja and Jaren and Dylan all had to hit big shots, and it felt, you know, not like a big moment in the sense of, like, it wasn't a conference final. It wasn't, you weren't beating the Lakers or someone like that, but it was a tense fourth quarter where they had to come from behind and win the game. And I think those are experiences that, whether they make the playoffs or not, are invaluable going forward.
Well, I'm having fun, playoffs or not, without including them or not, just because, to the point you made, the style is so much different.
Yep.
Well, even with Fizz, with JB, you're playing that style that isn't fun to watch.
Well, I think that was
now I'm just having fun with the style just itself, separate of thinking even playoffs or, and separate of the development. The style is so much more fun to watch, and I think it's why you've got so many more people, not just here in Memphis, watching too, mm-hmm. because now you're winning in a way that the NBA, you know, that we all love. And your guards are, you know, you're dunking on people, you're getting out and running, you're shooting the ball. But to back to the playoff thing, and you talked to Kleiman, mm-hmm. and I'll bet this is the way I want to
playoffs
ask it.
Never entered his into the conversation,
because you don't not trade Jay Crowder because all of a sudden you think, right, you don't change course because all of a sudden you think in first year, oh my gosh, we're so close to the playoffs that I've got to keep him now. You know what I mean? And then
yeah, we didn't get
into a possible asset.
This was a pretty casual
right?
conversation.
So that's why I guess I've kind of made you the sort of playoff talk and kind of put it all on you. But I don't want the expectation changing to where mm-hmm. you're changing up the approach that's worked so well so far, which is building up all these assets.
Yeah. Well, and
does
I actually
sense?
Yes,
yeah.
And I think Jay Crowder is going to be interesting
oh, man.
At the deadline in that he. Obviously, he's played better of late, but his real value is in that locker room.
Mm-hmm.
And
they love him.
The question I have is, with this young group, if you want to, if now you're thinking about playing meaningful games, whether it's playoffs or not.
See, this now you're getting to where
it will be interesting to see what they decide. Like, is, uh-huh. say, a second-round pick that they would get for him, and a second-round pick and some salary, is that worth disrupting what's very clearly some very good chemistry in that locker room? I don't know.
Probably
I don't
not
know
if it's low second round. I don't know. Or we were in a position with Tyreek Evans a few years ago where you said you take anything. You take a six mm-hmm. pack.
Yeah.
Do you do that now with a team
I don't
that
know.
Clearly loves this dude and you want to maximize that development? And maybe just having him around helps do that?
Yeah, I don't know. It's an interesting
it really
question
is.
That they're going to have to answer. Like, very clearly, they're going to trade Iguodala.
Go
I think Josh Jackson will be used as leverage to try and maybe trade Solomon Hill, or you know, as a, you know, you take on a big salary, you combine those two salaries. Like, it's very clear to me, I don't think Josh Jackson will ever play for
the
Grizzlies.
He won't see the light of day. He's never the intention, was it?
Yeah, no, I think he is going to be used. Maybe after the deadline, if he's not packaged, maybe we'll see him. But, I mean, honestly, they're already playing 11 guys. I don't know where you're going to be able to fit him in. Yeah. But it'll be interesting to see what they decide to do with Jay Crowder. Sure. Because I think if you just trade away all the veterans, I don't know if that's the right – exactly the right thing to do for this team this year, even if you may sacrifice a second-round pick in the future to do it. I wonder if it's more valuable to continue this chemistry that you've developed in the locker room. And then, heck, they've got a lot of cap space in the offseason. I wouldn't necessarily be opposed to, if it's a one-year deal or something.
Yeah, it better be real short. Yeah,
yeah,
I know where you're going.
You know, like, you know, if you need, you got to spend 90% of the salary cap. If you have to, bringing them back for a year. I'm not saying they should do that. I think with the right deal, yes, you should trade him because he's an expiring contract.
Exactly.
Some contender's going to want him.
Let's not lose our minds. I mean, the reason the Grizzlies got here is because they were smart and they were shrewd and they made hard but the right decisions, you know. And so let's not lose sight of that just because, like, the West, like, the bottom of the, you know.
Well, and they can get themselves better without, like, the Iguodala. Like, Iguodala's not playing for them. Like, they can actually, like, let's say they make that Dallas deal where they get Courtney Lee and that early second-round pick that Dallas has. Like, Courtney Lee isn't as good as when he was here in Memphis now, but I think he could help them down the stretch maybe in a limited role. As a shot maker, I don't know.
I'm almost willing to just let De'Anthony Melton continue to try to develop and see if that's a.
Oh, know you don't want to see C. Lee back in Memphis, dog?
Well, I just like the young pieces.
No, but like maybe
they got a decision on him too.
But maybe Courtney Lee gets some minutes instead. I mean, even Grayson Allen's played better of late.
He's been better to the point that you're asking yourself the question now.
Yeah,
is he a piece?
That's what's fascinating about all this is Taylor Jenkins, and I think he doesn't get brought up enough in all of this because. We talk about the style of play. That's all him. And he's made some mistakes. He's only 38 games into his head coaching career. What I've been really impressed with is you've noticed this team doesn't spiral. When they play poorly, they respond the next night. They've responded really well to him.
Yeah.
Whether he's perfect or not, it seems like they trust him, and they now trust this system. And, you know, whether it's Jaren, you know, morphing into a different type of player, giving Ja this freedom and him really, Ja's had a lot of freedom to make mistakes, but he's also, to me, very clearly playing within the system as well. I think that speaks to Taylor Jenkins getting through to him. He ended up getting De'Anthony Melton into the lineup. I know there was a long period there where Guterich was getting minutes that he probably didn't deserve, but they wanted to see what he could do. And now
they're winning with De'Anthony.
Yeah, he's settled on this rotation. Yeah. It seems like he's pushing a lot of the right buttons. And I think I've been impressed. I don't know if he's ultimately the coach when this team is hopefully a Western Conference contender.
Right.
But I think he's made a good initial impression as the head coach of this team.
I think all that is so valid. And I guess where I rest is I can enjoy this season and not even consider playoffs. Like the thought not even enter my mind. Like I don't need
I just like having something to look at in the standings.
Well, you do, though. You do have something to look at, though. You don't even to hell with the standings. You don't need that. You got Ja Morant. You got Jaren Jackson Jr. You got Brandon Clark.
The style itself is
you know, like, up. That's not enough for you, though. It is enough.
You're
insatiable. You're completely insatiable.
If they lose 9 of 10 and they fall out of the race, I'll still be interested in the team, but I'll naturally be more interested. Like, I don't see what's the harm in talking and thinking about the playoffs, even if it's just January.
This is where I want to go, if John doesn't mind, a little bit off the beaten path here, but you talked about it. You met a little bit with Kleiman. He rarely does any interactions with media or coming on. What were your impressions? What was he like? Is he reading what people write about and what people say? Does he care? What kind of
impression? I think he does. I've had a few interactions with him over the past 6 months, two or three. Like, I ran him one time. I ran into him randomly at Fino's grabbing lunch, and you know,
you don't see him sort of explaining his vision out publicly on radio.
I think that's a decision made above his head, and I also think I don't think he minds it. I think he's
it was so
fine
with
being,
Chris who would come out.
And I think he's fine being in the background. I expect he'll talk, you know, around the trade deadline. But I think that's a that's an organizational decision is how I would phrase it. I'll be honest, when I see him, I don't tend to talk to him that much about the Grizzlies because I'm trying to develop a relationship with him.
Absolutely.
And you know, he's around the same. He's a little younger than me, actually. He's like 31, I think, or 30. And
gosh, he's young.
Yes.
Yeah, and you knew that already when you started talking about 30, 31.
Well, and I also think Tayshaun has a really big role in all this, too. Mm. I think he's, and Rich Cho, he's around. He's here in Memphis. I think those three are, you know, Zach.
Were they all there for Georgia?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. They were all the whole front office.
Everybody was there.
Watching warmups. And now Zach did tell me that they have done their due, even though they're probably not going to get a top six pick. He said they have at this point evaluated every possible prospect that could be a top six pick.
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of, like,
it's a short list.
Yeah, they had already seen. Well, no, I mean, I think it's a large list because who knows who's top six in this draft.
I don't know. Are there that many top
RJ
six
Hampton,
caliber guys?
You know, is he going to find his way in there? You know,
going to kind of drop off is my point. I don't know. To your point, it's wide open, so you can put a lot in there. But it's also.
But they had seen Anthony Edwards before Saturday.
Of course.
They had evaluated him before Saturday. But, no, and I just think they are very happy with where the direction this is headed, just like the whole city seems to be now catching on to it based on this recent hot streak. And like I said, I don't know if this is going to continue. I think for the short term, with the way they're playing right now and the confidence they're building, with 9 of the next 12 against teams that are below 500 and the next 5 at home, I wouldn't be shocked if this continues. But I also, realistically, I still think it's probably like a 35-win team that, you know, down the stretch, probably because there's a lot of road games
down the stretch,
they'll level out. But while the tide is high, I'm going to ride it, John.
No, I ain't going to hate on you. I can't hate on you either. I mean, do your thing, man. We can all get there the way we get there, right? We are, of course, talking to Mark Giannotto. He joins us every single Wednesday here on the show. Read him at commercialappeal.com. Listen to him every afternoon on Giannotto and Jeffrey from 2 until 4. Okay, the other basketball team in town. They're an interesting study to me because they're still a top 25 team, yet it felt like all of the air came out of the balloon on Saturday. Like, it just, like, on Twitter, just around the city, like, it just felt like, man, they were a top 10 team a week ago, and now it's like they're hanging on, and their quad one wins aren't necessarily looking that good anymore.
They just have one now.
Well, they have two, actually, as of today.
Tennessee moved back into the top 75?
In, yeah.
All right.
So this will be we'll monitor this situation as it goes on. What do you make of them?
I don't think it wasn't as good as when they were on a 10-game winning streak, and it's not as bad as people are making it out to be right now.
Right.
Like, a lot of the issues that cropped up in that Georgia game were there before the Georgia game.
No doubt about it.
They weren't shooting the ball well.
Yep.
That Boogie Ellis was not playing that well.
Yep.
Turning it over.
Yeah, turning the ball over.
And they almost lost to UAB. They beat UAB, so people, like, moved on, but, like, they almost lost to UAB.
What the team had been really good at is in the last, even the Tulane game, the last 4 minutes of games,
yep,
they were executing well and outplaying people in the last 4 minutes games, whether it was UAB, Tennessee, Ole Miss. Ole Miss, they kind of died, but then they recovered in the last couple minutes. They got big buckets when it mattered, and that just didn't happen against Georgia. And it's not going to happen every game, especially when, you know, it's a team that was missing its two best players, essentially, Wiseman and DJ Jeffries. And it's a bunch of freshmen and sophomores. Like, it's just not every game you're not going to be able to do that. And so I'm not that concerned about them personally. I think the whole, are they an elite team, not necessarily went out the door when Wiseman left, but it just, you know, the margin for error is just a lot smaller now with this group. But at the same time, I still think I mean, you look at the AAC, like they, even if they lose, like let's say they lose close to Wichita State on Thursday, I'm still not going to be that worried about them. Now, if they go and lose to USF on the road on Sunday, then I'm then you're pressing the panic button.
Right.
But I think they're going to find their way. I was really encouraged. Penny, I have a column coming out about this in a little bit. I thought it was really interesting that after this Georgia game, it's the first time I can remember since he became the coach where he got really introspective and kind of, you know, kind of conceded, you know, I could have done a better
job. Took the blame.
You know, like,
I mean, like he did.
Like yesterday, even on the, like he did it after the game, then he did it on his radio show Monday. And then yesterday I asked him, I go, you know, you keep saying like, I'm going to be better. I'm going to learn from this. You know, what do you mean by that? And his point was basically teams need to be adjusting to us. And in the Georgia game, he was reacting to what Tom Crean was doing.
Like
he felt, for instance, he's like, we should have played our bigs. That's what he thinks. I don't necessarily agree with that, but he was thinking of it in terms of Precious got tired. We should have played our bigs more. And I was afraid to play them because I didn't think they could guard the small lineup that Georgia was playing, but we should have gone zone. And
right.
We hadn't practiced zone in a month, so I was afraid to go zone. And so he was like, and it was just fascinating because usually after all the losses last year, after the Oregon loss, it was, I'm not saying Penny would blame the players, but he certainly would not blame his game plan for the, and it seems like in this Georgia game, he felt he could have done better. And you don't usually hear that out of him. And I was really encouraged by that. And I also just think his temperament in general is good with the city around these players, not panicking, but really being, I think, hypercritical of one loss. I think Penny's temperament is very good. He's, you know, he's even keeled and calm, and I think that confidence will help this team. Now, you know, I do worry about the fact that DJ still hadn't practiced as of yesterday. Damian Ball hasn't practiced since the Georgia game. I think they'll both play. My guess is they'll both play tomorrow, but you know, are they going to be 100%? I doubt that, you know, at this point. And so that makes what was already a tough game even tougher.
Mm-hmm.
But I think they're just, their margin for error, both with their schedule and with the players they have now, is just smaller. But at the same time, you look at the American, to me, it's very clearly a three-team league.
No doubt about
it. It's Memphis, Wichita State, and Houston.
Yep.
No one else has really distinguished themselves. Now, what I think would work in Memphis's favor is they need SMU, I think, is still top 75 in the net rankings.
Because of the record, yeah.
They need them to stay there. So that's a tier one win, quadrant one win. UConn and Cincinnati are kind of right on the outside.
Cincinnati's 85th.
Yeah, like they need those teams to win a couple games so that they can be top 75, and that means those road games will be quadrant one opportunities. Because I do think Memphis's seeding, its schedule just is not working in its favor this year.
So what are they playing for seed-wise? How high can they get with what's left on the schedule? Four?
I think four is probably.
I'm starting to doubt three. I think John brought up three yesterday.
If they run the table, they'll be a three.
Yeah, if they run the table, if they go, like,
You're talking about an undefeated season in conference.
Well, like, let's say they're 12 and 2.
I'd give it to you.
Let's say they go 16-2 and win the conference tournament. I think you get a top four seed.
I think you're four. Yeah.
I think you get a top four seed right there. Yeah. But I don't know if you're going to be able to go 16-2 in conference. I think it's so muddled in the AAC. I think 13-5 or 14-4 will be enough to win the regular season, and that's where I expect them to be something like that.
I would probably take 14-4 right now.
Yeah, 5 seems like a little much, but 4.
If you tell me I can take 14-4 or whatever's behind door number 2, I would probably take 14-4 right now.
Mm-hmm. Wichita State, and you got to go to Houston. You got to go to Cincy.
Yeah,
got to go to Cincy. Go to UConn. Like, even though UConn and Cincinnati are not good,
still
those
there,
are going to be hard games on the road.
Yeah.
And then you have the conference tournament where you'll have another. You'll probably hopefully have some more opportunities to get some quadrant one wins. But I'm going to guess they're going to fall in the 4-7 range in seeding, depending on how the season goes.
Yeah.
And frankly, whatever seed they are, I think they'll have the same. I don't know, you know, it all depends on matchups, whatever. I think that Whether they're a 4 seed or a 7 seed, I think they're going to have a similar chance of making the Sweet 16 from those spots.
No doubt. Well, I think
way college basketball is this year.
Agreed. Like I could see Memphis making a run as a 6 seed and making a Sweet 16 run, not in a Final Four run, but a Sweet 16 run as a 6 seed. Like I can see that. I mean, it's not like there are not great teams in college basketball this year.
No. To me, there's two players that really factor in. Like. The one thing the thing about this Memphis team, when you look at it from Penny's perspective, who are the players you can really trust on this team?
There are only two or three.
No, I think there's four. I think it's Alo. I think it's Precious.
Yep.
I think it's DJ.
Yep.
And I think Lester. I think you can trust those. If you're Penny Hardaway,
you can trust effort from Lester.
You know those guys. Yeah. Are like, if you're talking about who's gonna play for me in crunch time of a game,
right?
Those four are gonna be in the game.
Agreed.
And it's figuring out who the fifth guy is. And I think a huge key to all of this, of how good this team is does Boogie Ellis emerge as that fifth guy?
Absolutely.
Does he become?
I think we all had him penciled in there to start this year.
And then the other guy, I think, who's really important. Whether there's the three big guys are really important because we saw Precious cannot count on. Precious needs to be playing 33 or 34 minutes a game,
yep.
Not 38 minutes a game.
Yep.
Because you saw at the end of that game he got tired.
He was gassed.
And whether it's Lance or Malcolm or Isaiah, and I think my gut tells me the most likely is Lance, needs to be able to give them 10 to 15 competent minutes so that DJ and Precious can get a blow. They're not going to be guys you play in crunch time. Like, your crunch time lineup is going to be DJ and Precious in the front court.
My issue is, have we seen Lance be a real big against this kind of competition?
Well, to me, the ideal guy is Malcolm,
right.
But I just don't know if he's
so
ready.
Early on
I don't know
career.
If he's ready. Like, if you're talking about what they actually need, which is a guy who can defend the rim, grab rebounds.
What he looks like. Exactly.
Malcolm is the guy.
Absolutely.
But I just don't know if with the injury
yet.
And him being so young, mm-hmm. I don't know if he's ready for that yet.
Yeah.
And so that's why I think – my gut tells me Lance is the most likely, even though his attributes do not necessarily fit that. That's what you need from him, and so it's going to be a fascinating season. I know some people are down a little bit after the loss, but it's a young team.
Georgia is not good. I mean,
they're not good, but they're not bad either. Like
right.
You saw against Kentucky, that is going to be a team with its coach that is going to be competitive in a lot of SEC games. Like they are better than Ole Miss.
Well, they do have a top three pick on the roster.
Yes.
I mean, so like by proxy.
The reason I think it was so disappointing, like I think people, if they had lost by three and Anthony Edwards had scored 30 points, I think people would feel a lot differently.
No doubt
about
it.
It's because he had a bad game and they still won. But I just think it's going to happen. This team is, like I said, the margin for error is not as big as it was when James Wiseman was here, which means there's going to be there. I don't think this is the last game you think they should win that they're going to drop this year.
Oh, that's fair. Now I got to ask you, because you were out at Briarcrest, right? You were
yes.
at Briarcrest for
yes.
the barn burner, 32-22. And did you write a comment? I just missed it.
I did not write a column.
Where was the outrage?
It wasn't.
You didn't hear him on this. He goes against your point.
It was not great. Like I am very much an advocate for high school basketball having a shot clock. That being said, if you were there, and I know it's funny, I know the IMG coach really well. He used to coach in the DC area, and he was upset about it. But at the same time, Briarcrest outscored them. Get this, 21-4 in the second half. Like it wasn't like yes, they were holding the ball, but.
Like, what did a possession for Briarcrest look like?
What they did is they would get the rebound and race up the court.
So they tried to score.
They would try to score on the fast break, and if they didn't, they'd pull
then
it out.
And it
wasn't like Kennedy was holding the ball at half court the entire time. He would dribble around, they'd run the weave, and they were long possessions, and they were very clearly taking
like
the air.
Like how long? Like a minute or two?
Yeah, I'd say like a minute. Yeah, I'd say like
brilliant.
A minute. But again, shut them down.
So brilliant.
Like, they just shut them down. It wasn't like it was a close game and they took the air out of the ball. It was they did this the entire game.
Oh, that's impressive.
They out-coached, John Harrington out-coached the IMG coach, Sean McAloon. And there was some skill involved in it. Like, you could not have done what they did without an elite point guard like Kennedy Chandler. Yes. Like he would, you wouldn't have been able to pull it off.
Yeah.
And then what's the Rodney Newsome, the big guy?
Newsome's son.
He was unbelievable. It's
big
like
football
the
player,
6'5", 300-pound guy. Mm-hmm. And IMG's got these 7-footers, and he's just like these 7-footers would try to back him down, and he would just belly him up, and it was hilarious. He was fantastic, yeah. And so it was not a work of art.
Right.
It shouldn't have come to that, in that there should have been a shot clock. But Briarcrest was working within the confines of the rules that were at play in that game,
right.
And I think
same
there
pace.
Was
they scored 21.
I think there was
four.
Some skill involved in what they did, and they totally shut down IMG, which really
but
IMG didn't have Jaden Springer,
right.
And Jalen Johnson, the Duke commit, he left
right.
the team. So like Matthew Morrell, for instance, was really their point guard, and Matt is not a point guard really. But they got frustrated. It frustrated them, and they did not get good looks in the second half. And that, I think, you know, it, like I said, should have been a shot clock, but I give Briarcrest credit because they outplayed them too in the second half.
So you're saying that the shot clock was irrelevant?
No, if there was a shot clock, I would guess IMG would have won the game.
Right.
You know, if they had more possessions. Part of the reason they got frustrated is because they knew they were only going to get 6 or 8 shots in an entire quarter.
Right. Good on John Harrington. That's a good win for Briarcrest.
He said,
John, you were hating on it yesterday, not anymore.
He said it was the biggest win
in school history, aside
from winning the state title.
Yeah like I would predict that IMG does not want to come back. And if they do come back, they will request to not play Briarcrest.
Well, they'll probably request, like, what I was surprised by, like, in the D.C. area when they played these showcases when I covered high school, these elite teams would come and they'd play other elite, like a team that played with the shot clock would not play a team that doesn't play with the shot clock.
Right. Yes. And that will be a condition upon their return.
Well, the problem is like that's what you probably have to change the venue because a lot of these, most of these Memphis venues do not even have shot clocks available.
Right.
You know, although that game should have been at like the Landerson.
If there was
a fire marshal, like it would have been shut down. Like it was
you said
like
they
so,
turned away hundreds.
There was when I got there. I got there about 5-10 minutes before the Mount Verd Woodale game. So the second to last game, there were people lined up the front entrance, that gym entrance of Briarcrest.
Yeah.
There were people lined up to almost the football stadium entrance.
That's crazy, man.
Wow.
And they were not letting anyone
in. That at Briarcrest.
And they were not letting anyone in.
Wow.
And so it was. It was a pretty incredible atmosphere, and there were a lot of
Pat was there. All the coaches were there, too.
Patrick, well, there weren't a lot of Kermit Davis came to watch Morrell.
Yep.
Patrick Ewing was there the entire time I was there. I'm not sure. They've lost a bunch of couple guys, and so they're looking to pick up some late recruiting stuff. Greg Brown was there with his dad. Lester, Alo, and Malcolm Dandridge were there. Penny and the whole Memphis staff were there.
Yep.
It was a great environment, and like I said, I guess you'd probably lose some of that if you moved it to a Lander Center.
Right.
But I also think turning away hundreds of – they probably lost a lot of money.
Well, yes.
I know you get packed scenes at the prep scenes in Washington, but you ever have it where it's like that?
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or – I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with 3 rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.